Welcome to Inclusion Bites, your sanctuary for bold conversations that spark change. I'm Joanne Lockwood, your guide on this journey of exploration into the heart of inclusion, belonging, and societal transformation. Ever wondered what it truly takes to create a world where everyone not only belongs, but thrives? You're not alone. Join me as we uncover the unseen, challenge the status quo, and share stories that resonate deep within. Ready to dive in? Whether you're sipping your morning coffee or winding down after a long day, let's connect, reflect, and inspire action together. Don't forget, you can be part of the conversation too. Reach out to joe.lockwood@seechangehappen.co.uk to share your insights or to join me on the show. So adjust your earbuds and settle in. It's time to ignite the spark of inclusion with Inclusion Bites. And today is episode 149 with the title, Beating the Odds. And I have the absolute honor and privilege to welcome Georges Cordoba. Georges is a stage 4 cancer survivor, holistic health coach, and best-selling author who empowers individuals to transform their health vitality through holistic even practices. When I asked Georges to describe his superpower, he said it is turning adversity into a mission of hope, healing, and purpose. Hello, Georges. Welcome to the show.
How are you doing, Joanne? Thank you for inviting me. And I'm honored to share some minutes with you.
Absolute pleasure. So we were chatting in the green room just now, and you're New Mexico in the US?
Yes.
And you were telling me a bit about how you have family and relatives in the California area with the wildfires. Do you want to just tell me about how worrying that is?
Yes, very worrying. Because on top of everything, the fires are very tough to contain because they have 85, 90 mile an hour winds. On top of everything, it's like a perfect storm. Now they have that's unusual, a tropical storm turning hurricane over there. So they're getting better, but it's been crazy. When you see pictures, it seems like it also looks like in the kind of atomic bomb, the way they burned all those homes. And there are some inexplicable situations where you see an entire streets of mansions burned out. And then on the side, you still see some trees that were not hit. So it was like, it's nature. It's tough to understand sometimes when you see the end result. But it's worrying. Not so much also, I mean, the burning is amazing, but the smoke. They're evacuating folks in terms of, you know, for smoke inhalation. So my son lives in Venice Beach, which is, basically right at the coast. He's not being evacuated yet. And I have some Greek family in San Fernando Valley, and it hasn't been affected. But again, a valley getting all the smoke they were talking about yesterday, that also having these folks evacuate because of the smoke in Asian. Yeah. So it's quite for us, you know, anywhere. I have my oldest son there and some of my mother's cousins, like I said, in Sherman Oaks. But hopefully by the end of the week, right now is Monday, but we're hoping that very soon, sooner than later, they can contain this stuff. Destruction is amazing. LA, it's not the same, my son is saying, and affects obviously the work, the folks, professionals. You have the elite there, the Hollywood stars losing their homes, and, you know, it's a little bit crazy right now. Yeah.
Yeah, and people are given minutes to evacuate. They're leaving everything behind, literally what they're wearing.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. They can do it. It's like... you know, like hurricanes. I lived in Miami, Florida for 30 years. We've gone through a few of them, particularly one in 1993 was very, very strong with 200 mile winds, 225 mile gust winds. Andrew, Hurricane Andrew. And same thing, if you're in the evacuation zone, you leave everything behind and hope that it's there when you come back.
Yeah. I mean, being in the UK, we often complain about our weather being too hot, too cold, too wet, too windy, whatever. But our weather really is not in extremes. It's kind of quite middling. Whereas in the US, I mean, my family and I, we spent some time in Orlando doing the Disney sort of experience, and we'd never experienced thunderstorms and torrential rain that lasted like 10 minutes. Thunderstorm, rainstorm, 10 minutes, then suddenly, poof, it's blue sky again. Never experienced anything like that. And also, I spent some time working in California, in LA, minor earthquakes. But I spent time in the Beverly Hills area, Santa Monica, Venice Beach, Long Beach, those places, down to San Diego. So, yeah, you see these environments, you just think they're almost invincible, but this fire has been a great leveler, hasn't it?
Yes, it's leveling. Yes, absolutely. Yeah.
So, Georges, your journey from battling advanced cancer to becoming a holistic health coach is quite remarkable. And so how did this shape your purpose and, you know, to quote you, give you a chance to sing the song you were born to sing?
Yeah, it's interesting because many people, Joanne, don't find their purpose. They go through their life and in a way existent. Just like Oscar Wilde said, that we were the most interesting folks because all we do is exist. And I believe in that. And in my case, since I was a youngster, I always liked to help people. Somehow I was born with that talent, if you will. I was always aware of seeing the less fortunate around me, especially growing up in South America and Venezuela. My parents being immigrants, you know, they worked so much to get back to on their feet because they lost everything in World War II. My family from Greece and then the other part of my family from Spain, they went to Venezuela. They were doing great in Europa. With the war, they were victims of losing pretty much everything. And so, but they managed to go to clubs. My dad ended up playing Davis Cup tennis. I learned tennis, and that's how I ended up in the United States. But I always wanted to help people. For example, they would give us allowance at the club, you know, for the day. We would be working out, learning tennis and practicing. Then I became part of the national junior team. And we had ball boys. These ball boys were, they were poor kids that they would, you know, bring in, and they would give them uniforms, and they would be our ball boys, even for kids to kids. And I had a lot of compassion for them. And I would convince my friends to give them the change after we will go and have snacks. We'll give them the change. So we will go to where they were gathering. They had them in a place in the club, and we will just give them the change that we got from eating so they could go eat. So that was something that I grew up with. I learned, I went to school with the Jesuits, and they had a ministry to do some help to the areas of less fortunate, favelas and stuff like that. I went to a place to help it was a tribe in the border between Venezuela and Colombia. And we spent 2 weeks helping them building, getting electricity and stuff, and just living, you know, being in hammocks with these amazing things to protect ourselves with these huge mosquitoes. But at the end, we would leave, and, you know, when you serve others, and I have this in my book, service is healing as well. We have a component in ourselves, Joanne, that is to help people, to be, you know, kind of like some of the avatars, not only Jesus, but, you know, in the East Indians, you know, Babaji, and later on, more in modern Paramahansa Yogananda. I read these folks, and it's all about love and service. And I have to tell you this, when I was ill, I still had this compassion. I was going through regular conventional treatments, radiotherapy, chemotherapy, but I still joined a volunteer program from the American Cancer Society, which was about taking folks that were ill taken to their treatments. And the way they did this is, I was working. I folks in my area that were going through cancer like me. But, I just decided to join. I was in one of my remissions. I'll tell you in a second about that. But so I would drive. We would drive patients to their treatments. We would drop them off. And then another volunteer will come and pick them up. Sometimes those treatments will take longer. So somebody else will pick them up and take him back home. It's interesting. Every time you help somebody from your heart, at the end of it, you think, who helped who? You go home and you say, man, I feel I'm the one. You feel you feel fulfilled. And in my book, I say service to others is healing. It's one of the things that I experienced. And so that was it. So basically, because of things in life, our parents, though, they had a hard time in Europe. So when they get to America, South America, they wanted the best for you. We had to be either doctors, lawyers, or engineers of some type. Because in that case, you would not suffer if there was another war or whatever. They had that trauma. So for me, it was easy, logic and mathematics, natural. So I said, well, I'm going to study engineering. And then I was very attracted to technology, and it was starting. I was born in 1960, but, in 1975, you started to see some things. And 1980, I started to study computer science. And I'm blessed because I've seen the transformation of technology. It took in the beginning, it was 50 years for a change. Now in our days, it's like 5 months. But getting back to the answer there, it's interesting because when I look back on my, I'm not sure if I mentioned this to you, but on year 8, I fought cancer, advanced cancer, melanoma, for 10 years. And I had 10 surgeries, including 4 craniotomies because I had metastasis in my brain and 2 gamma knives. And 2 of my 8 tumors, when I had my first craniotomy, they told me, and here's something very interesting. There's 13 rules of the mind, Joanne. And one of them is that for us in the West, and when I say the West, it's Europe, US, the mind goes to what is familiar. This is for everyone, but it goes to what is familiar. And in the West, what is familiar is to go running, almost running to an oncologist. There's no other option. You just go to an oncologist. You ask for friends and say, hey, do you know anybody that is good? Because cancer hits everybody indirectly or directly. Here in the U.S., by the way, 1 or 2 men, if we don't change our ways, will have cancer in their lifetime. And 1 or 3 women will have cancer in their lifetime. So we're not a healthy nation. 48% of the nation it has 1 or 2 chronic diseases. But so anyway, I'm going through this stuff, and I'm still a CTO. I became an executive in technology, chief technology officer, when I got sick. And so I battled the disease for 10 years. I had 10 surgeries, 4 craniotomies. But on year eight, and this is why, when you're going to see now why I say it gave me the chance to sing the song I was born to sing. On year 8, after my first craniotomy, the FDA found a pharma and research found a type of chemo that would penetrate the brain. And so they gave me that in a form of, it was oral, it was capsules, which, by the way, $1,000 for each capsule. It's crazy. By year 8, we had to tap into retirement accounts. We had to tap into our kids' college funds that we were basically saving for. We were doing good. I was a CTO. My wife was in the medical industry as an ultrasound tech for cardiovascular and obstetrics. So we were doing well. But boy, when this stuff hit us. But on year 8, I started taking these pills. It was Monday to Friday, and then take a break on the weekend, and then Monday to Friday again. On my second Monday, my 6th capsule, I thought I was going to get a heart attack. I just could not, like I said in my book, in the introduction, pharma's almost killed me. And so So I did, just had this very fast palpitations. I got dizzy. I started sweating. And I was alone. The kids were in school. My wife was working. I had to stop working after 18 months. It was tough. And so at that moment, Joanne, I decided, you know what? This is not working for me. This is just really not working for me. I need to go on a different route. And by that time, I was looking into things, you know, that were natural, not chemicals. And because I'm a person of faith as well, I when my wife got home, I said, look, I'm stopping this. Are you sure? What are you doing? Well, no. I said, look, I know myself. This is killing me. So I'm not doing any more chemo and radio. I'm going to go natural. I'm going to go the holistic journey and holistic health journey to survive. And this past July 24, it was my 12th year free of cancer. So, but many things happened there. And as I was going through my process, I stopped, blaming the world or the universe. I mean, it was my fault. You know, we need to understand, if we humble ourselves, it was us. It's us that get us ourselves sick. Our lifestyle, maybe we're too stressful, doing too many things, whatever it is. But it is us. I'm a nutritionist as well. And, I have to tell you that 25% of nutrition and digestion is what you eat. 75% is who you are when you're eating. Are you eating in a hurry? Do you chew very few times before you swallow? I mean, there are so many things that we do to get ourselves sick. Then comes another thing when you study holistic health, this is pretty much a fact. These are facts. All chronic diseases, Joanne, all of them without exception, cancer included, started in an acidic body and inflamed bodies. We have inflamed tissue because we have too much acid in our cells. Dieting, maybe we stress or we produce cortisol, and also, and this was found out not too long ago after epigenetics, all disease, by the way, is emotional as well. And that's why many people get recurrences, because doctors are not nutritionists. They're not psychologists. They're not acupuncturists. They're not Reiki or massage therapists. They just know what they go ahead.
Yeah, so listen to that. It's just contextualize it. So you had multiple cranial surgery. So that's basically peeling back your skin, bits of your skull
not
off.
Not even skin. They actually saw. I don't know if you can see because I have, it's a night. I have scars. Obviously, yeah. I was lucky because I didn't get many cavities. You know, sometimes when they remove the tumor, then you get like a cavity there. My first one was from ear to ear. Here is 2, 3. And in this side, 4. And the 2 gamma knives, 2 of the 8 tumors that I got in my brain were not operable. So that I'm going to let you guys, if you have a chance to get the book, it is very interesting. I have not promoted my books. And it's I'm writing 2 more. When I say my books, it's because I first launched it in English. But then I launched that in Spanish 3 months later on St. George's Day in April. This is 2021. Spanish, and they both made bestseller in my genre in the first day. And that was remarkable. I'm thinking, how can this happen? And you find out that, you know, there's many people going through this disease. It's becoming really, to give you a perspective, during COVID, which actually I think took about 5 million lives in a year and a half, so 2 years. On 2021, 10 million people passed of cancer. So the real pandemic is this, you know, it's just why does it happen? And why does it still recurring, you know? And the reason is because the doctors are not into finding the root cause. They're just going there to throw the kitchen sink on you, like we say in America, and try everything they can, new formalities, and see how they can help Georges or, you know, the different patients.
Are you saying that this all stemmed from melanoma, which is skin cancer?
It's skin cancer, and then, yes.
And travels from that, yeah?
Yes. By the way, great question there, great point, because melanoma still is hard to really contain. It's very unpredictable and it's very aggressive. It's probably... It's right neck to neck with pancreatic cancer. If, to give you an example, my last two tumors, and I was already on year 8 after those capsules, I decided to go natural. And I was lucky because basically the moment I surrendered, I went to this chapel and I cried. I was releasing so much, you know. Crying is healing, by the way, it cleans your soul. But I surrender. I say, look, these guys, they're trying, but, you know, this is not working for me. Give me some discernment to look for alternatives. I'm really very close to make this decision. And obviously, I have a surgeon in my family, his wife, and they're both my daughters and godparents. They were, and my wife, no, you're crazy. Keep going. Like, there's no other alternative. But because of my tennis too, I saw cancer. It got to a point for me that I said, you know what? There's a reason why I'm the only one from all my cohorts that started with me, the treatments, that I'm the only one that has survived. I had some survival, like survival guilt. I'm the only one that survived. There's got to be a reason. And at that moment, when I decided to go natural, I said, you know what? This is going to work. And I have to share something with you, Joanne. From my Greek side of the family, I saw cancer taking the life of my grandparent, his brother, and that was 4 or 5 years old. Then my grandmother's two sisters two of them passed from cancer. Then my godfather, also part of the Greek family that went to Venezuela, passed of cancer. Then my uncle, my mother's brother. And 3 weeks before I was diagnosed, my mother passed of cancer. So for me as a kid, I remember this, the secret, the power of the, you know, not like sharing something and you might actually end up getting it. I was not surprised when I was diagnosed. I couldn't even mourn my mother, but I said, because I always thought, man, I'm doomed. And I never saw anyone. And here's part of the title of the talk of what we're doing today. I said at one point when I went through all the emotional roller coaster, I said, you know what? I'm going to beat the odds. I'm going to be the first person from my Greek family that survives this thing. And I went on my journey. And it came to a point that I said, man, this is not happening to me. It's happening for me. There's something going on here. I love technology. But my inner self, without knowing this, but I always felt it. If I could help somebody open a door, an elderly person opening the door in the gas station or at a supermarket or a store, I would do it. So I made that decision, and I went to my oncologist. Again, I thought he was going to, you know, give me a hard time. And he goes, are you sure, Georges, that you want to stop? And I said, doctor, look, it's been almost 8 years and I'm here, you know, surgery, treatment, remission, recurrence, surgery, treatment, remission, recurrence, 8 years. And the last one now in the brain. So I'm going natural. And so he asked me again. I said, yes, doctor, but I would appreciate if you could continue to do follow-ups on me. And he agreed. He said, okay, Georges, and if what you're doing is not working, something else came up approved by the FDA, and maybe that would help you. Because all they're doing is applying the stuff that they find.
You must have felt a lot of back pressure from the medical professionals, because medical science says holistic non-medical intervention is just a myth. It's mumbo-jumbo. You're signing your own death warrant. Medical science is proved to work. Everything you're doing, you're just effectively praying and hoping, and yes, miracles don't occur. So you must have felt a lot of pressure from your family, from your friends.
Yes, absolutely.
Almost like you're giving up.
Yes, a few friends, real good ones, and even one of my best friends, my brother, he played doubles with me since we were little, and we went to different countries and played tournaments. But his wife was into holistic stuff since she was 18. She was, they said, whatever you do, George, we support you. And my kids were little, so they had no say there. Poor things, they actually grew up fearing that dad will go like their grandma, and they had to live. I feel so bad when I already, had that go. But for a while, I was feeling guilty that I couldn't do many other things that I was doing, when I wasn't sick. But yeah, it was tough. I had to do it against the mindset of many folks that, believe that the only option is treatments, conventional treatments. Now, I'm not against the medical world. If it wasn't for these 10 surgeries and 4 of them being craniotomies, I would not be talking to you, John. So, my son, we have twin sons, and those twins are the ones that made us grandparents. One of them, I had to fly an emergency flight to Miami in July. He had an infection in his blood, MRSA, and we almost lost him. And he has 3 little kids, 3 toddlers, and 4, 6, 8, 6, and 5. The one that's turning 5 now. But yeah, and now when you see the credits on my book, one of the doctors says that, which he really, really advocated for me to not stop. He says that, George has proved us wrong, that there are other alternatives. And now I've been doing this for 7.5 years, Joanne, and I've met some, what they call themselves now, holistic MDs. The doctors that got sick with cancer and realized in year 3 or 4, this is not working for me. Let me see what's out there. And they end up, going parallel and then little by little just moving into more of the alternative, which is a combination of things. It's not just what you eat and your lifestyle. Holistic health is really a combination of your physical body, your emotional body, your mental body, and your spiritual body, which is not really has to be religion, like a formalized religion. It's your connection. You're embracing the universe. I call it God. Through nature, you and I are connected, Joanne. Soul-wise. And learning to do that. One of the things, I use a metaphor. It's called the 4 legs of the table. One of the legs is your physical self. The other one is your emotional self, your mental self, and your spiritual self. If one of those or 2 of them are missing, the table can't stand. And that's really the holistic approach. And, once I surrender, because this is something that all the avatars say, not only the service and love, but it's really being humble. Humble yourself. He who humbles himself gets, in a way, stronger. He who is always up here, one day will really drop down. And so when I humble myself and surrender and I say, God, it's up to you. I like to see we're Catholics, and so I like to see my daughter's first communion, my kids finishing high school, being a better husband, a better Christian, better friend. And things started to happen when you put your faith, which, by the way, faith is nothing more than the certainty of what you want. Because there's something bigger than you that if you take action, it would help you. It's not a magic one. Or, like some folks say, now is a perfect example. Everybody has a New Year's resolution and stuff, and that's the intention. But an intention without action becomes an illusion. So I took action.
It sounds that what you're saying here is it's mindset. You have to believe in yourself, mm-hmm. believe in what you're talking about and what you're doing. Also, it's also radically changing your relationship with your environment, your food, your things around you. Because as a human species, we didn't evolve to live in society we are in today, to eat the food, to breathe the air, to interact yeah. the way we do. We were village dwellers in forests and caves and by the waterside, living a very holistic, very clean life. And we've polluted ourselves with sugars and additives and everything else. So we're trying to get back, what you're saying is trying to get back to that simplified intake, purity, if you like, not today's sludge, fat and sugars and all these other chemicals. So that's quite difficult to achieve in society today. Everywhere you look, fast food and bad food and bad air, bad water everywhere, isn't there?
And going on, that's amazing. Yes, that's one aspect. And then the other thing is that it's a fast-paced world. We don't take time for ourselves. And that is a key situation. We could have another episode about, I'd like to usually explain the human cycle. The sun is 365 days or 66, depending on the year. The moon is 28 days. We have 24-hour cycle. And some things need to happen there. And guess what? 99% of us don't honor this particular cycle. We do need to 8 hours, 6 to 8 hours of those 24 hours to detox and restore, which is when we sleep. But many people don't eat well during the day. And then an hour or so before they go to bed, they eat this huge meal. So what happens, I'm just giving you an example of how we actually cause these diseases upon us. We bring them. We are the ones that get ourselves sick. But the good news is that we also are the ones that can get ourselves back to healing. And that's where the mind comes in, the power of the mind and subconscious mind. However, what you were saying, like I said, 25% is what you eat. 75% is who you are when you're eating. If you're stressed out, you're producing cortisol, and you're one of the branches of your nervous system, the sympathetic branch of the nervous system, fight or flight. It says, "Oh, you know what? Joanne is stressed. We're not going to have a good digestion," and so. What happens is because of the cortisol and the stress, the vagus nerve tells the gut, hey, you know, Joanne is stressed out, so we'll see what you're going to do, stomach. The stomach, instead of going through the process, the beautiful process of digestion, stores everything to fat because it already received a nervous system message that says, you know what, this digestion can go. This is the example that I got from a naturopath. That's the first person I went to visit because an angel, I started calling these angels in human form coming to me when I made the decision to go natural. And she told me, go see this naturopath. He helped my sister basically rid of hepatitis. So I went and he explained me a lot of stuff, which by the way, later I'm going to tell you that I have a giveaway for your audience and for you, which is very powerful there. There's some good stuff in there that if you use, it'll get you on the way for better health. You don't have to be ill. If you're ill, you can manage your way back to health. And the reason for that I found out, and here's two things that are very important. Healing, Joanne, happens from the inside out, not from the outside in. This is, if you go to the East and in many other cultures, they understand this. We have such wisdom in our subconscious mind. That's why it interested me and I became a hypnotherapist. It is amazing how emotions have a big role in us getting sick. So in my book, I you're going to get recurrences. My friends, you're going to get recurrences until you find the root cause of what made you sick. And usually, most of the time, I would say almost bluntly, 100% of the time is emotional. So I was reading about this and one of my employees gave me a book on emotional intelligence. And in there, they were talking about the whole topic of forgiveness. So I started to look for avatars, past, even Dalai Lama, things like that on forgiveness. So because I was humble, I looked for people that hurt me when I was younger. And then one passed away, I had to do surrogate work. But the other ones, I basically went and said, hey, you know, I forgive you. Guess what, Joanne? None of them remember that they hurt me. I kept holding all this poison in me for decades. But when I did that, though, I felt like a piano went off my shoulders. And then I worked on being forgiven. I approached some people that I hurt, particularly some girls in high school. Not hurt, but it's just like I was, you know, immature, you know. But I went to say, I'm sorry. And only one lady, I remember, the other ones didn't either. But still, that helped me release some of this stuff that I had in me. And then the toughest one was forgiving myself. But I worked on that. If you humble yourself and understand that we're, like you said earlier, we're humans. We make mistakes. It's part of us. But if we deal with those, because, you know, those memories and those beliefs also produce cortisol. So there's two ways that we get all this acidity in our bodies. The cortisol from emotional clutter that we have, and the cortisol that we produce even when we're eating, because we're in a hurry, we need to do some errands, so fast food here, and then we chew very little. We chew 6 to 10 times, especially here in America, in the U.S., the average American chews 6 times before they swallow, when in reality, I can tell you as a nutritionist, I specialize in the digestive tract. We should be chewing between 20 and 32 times, depending on what we put in our mouth, because digestion starts in the mouth. The saliva enzymes process the food. Yeah.
I'm really being enlightened by what you're saying. Can I just take you back to that period 7 or 8 years ago when you were in the middle of this? So you were CTO of a company, so you're involved in tech, advising them, and you've got a family. And you've been diagnosed. I shall say, in the U.S. healthcare system, it wasn't that you had to invest in your treatment. You know, these $1,000 a day pills for whatever that cost. How did your family cope at that time with your condition? How was work? Were you accommodated with by your employer? Or was it quite tricky to try and keep everything going?
Yes, great question, by the way, Joanne. Yes, it was not fun. It was, first of all, a lot of people forget about the caregiver. Everybody is, how's George's now? How's George's? And they would not ask her, you know, like we had 5 kids and that was the 6th kid. After 18 months, you know, I couldn't really take all those treatments and I was, you know, working. I managed to do some work from home, but being a CTO, and I remember perfectly, I was at the pool and I was scratching. I had long hair. I used to be in the sun all my life in the Caribbean, surfing, snorkeling, water skiing, playing tennis, soccer. I love soccer. So I got, you know, I thought it was just a lot of accumulation of UV through the years, but it really did not, you know, come up. And I had no idea until I saw my mother suffering her last 6 months of life. So I was very emotional, very close to my mother. I was living in Miami. I would fly to Caracas, Venezuela every weekend to see her. And when it got to a point that my kids could go, we went and, you know, they stayed there 3 weeks at the house with my mother. My wife went, took some time off. But I was at the office. I was at the pool. I was scratching. I thought it was a pinball, I got some blood. So I called my wife. I was at the pool at the house with the kids. And she came and saw it, and she didn't like it. She goes, George, that doesn't look good. It was a Sunday. I'm going to call the kid's dermatologist tomorrow to see if you can go. He can see you. So that's how the whole thing started. And so she called on Monday. They said, look, we have no place until a month from now. And she goes, look, this is probably melanoma. She said, I know it. I mean, I'm in the medical world. I work with Baptist Hospital. So please, he asked the assistant there, if somebody cancels, let me know. Well, that afternoon, Joanne, she got a call from from this lady and said, look, we have an opening Wednesday morning. We go. So we went. On Thursday morning, well, when I was there, she had some resident students. And when she saw my lesion, what I had on my scalp right here, you may see a cross because there was a, then they had to do a little craniotomy there too because it reoccurred there. But so she started talking to them about, look, you see how it's irregular and this and that, and it's ulcerated. That's why it's, you know, so that could be that, you know, it kind of gone into his lymphatic system. So I thought, oh boy, this just doesn't sound right. But on Thursday morning, I'm in my office and my secretary said, Mr. Cordova, Dr. Trowers is on the phone and she says it's, you know, urgent. And I go, oh my God, if you, nobody wants to hear the word that, you know, you're diagnosed with cancer. All I could think is about my five kids and that this doesn't make sense, man. You blessed me with five beautiful kids and now I'm getting this stuff. My mother just passed 3 weeks ago from cancer and I thought the Greek landscape, you know, of cancer. And so it was really, I was frozen. When she told me, Mr. Cordova, you have malignant melanoma, it's ulcerated, you need to go get a biopsy right away. Oh my gosh, everything changed. I was going, if we in the average think 60,000 thoughts a day, well, that morning I was probably close to 300,000. It was just like all over. And so, you know, so I started thinking, first my kids, my wife, obviously, but I'm thinking, what am I going to do here? I had no idea how much it was going to influence my career as a leader. We were serving some big brick-and-mortar companies, Royal Caribbean Cruises, Celebrity Cruises, Ryder System, Del Monte, and they were my accounts. And so I'm thinking my account in terms of technology, obviously, the company is, but it came to a point that I really tried. I tried almost, like I said, 18 months going through already a couple surgeries, but it was already hurting me. Not only me, but my team. My team started seeing that I could not come because I had a surgery or then recuperating or another biopsy or doctor visits. You have a new routine in your life that all the summer was thrown to you. So it was tough. I could not coach my kids in soccer. I was a soccer coach. I taught them how to play tennis. We would go camping to the beach, vacation. All the stuff had to stop because it was very aggressive. It for me, when the time happened here, I was already, it was stage three. So, but, you know, if you look at me, the first surgery was up here. And then later on, it became also one of the craniotomies because in a way it wasn't because they didn't have to like saw my skull. But I did have some biopsy because I was having this like a hard lymph node in my right ear. It came positive. So they decided to do to extract 23 lymph nodes from my right side, but they couldn't get to three of them of those 23. So they sacrificed a muscle. We are amazing, our human body. The other muscle it took a few years, but it kind of compensates. But if you see me without
just the listeners, basically, yeah, it's in your neck going, yes, down. So from your ear, yeah, down through to your shoulder.
Down through my shoulder. Yeah. 23 lymph nodes. But yeah, those three, if they didn't sacrifice the muscle, they couldn't get and those three were positive. The other 20 were negative. 4 months later, I was already in treatment. I had the same situation on my left ear, and it was positive, so they took 22 lymph nodes from there. That was one, two, that was my fourth surgery. And then the whole loop, again, surgery, treatment, remission, recurrence. So I have nothing against surgery, especially the new things that they're doing with robots and stuff. I didn't get that. But my, especially for me, all of them, because my surgeon oncologist worked on anything that was my head, and the neurologist worked on, you know, my four craniotomies and two gamma knives, which are, those are they're considered surgeries. Well, I don't count them. It was 12 surgeries. But I stopped doing treatments on the eighth year, pretty much. And when I start getting still some recurrences, like I said, I fought it for 10 years, you know, I could hear or feel the energy of my family and relatives, kind of like, hey man, go back to this stuff. But I didn't. I stayed strong. I knew that the other stuff was killing me. So here I am. 12 years later, I'm cancer free.
I mean, listen to that. The amount of surgery you had, how invasive those surgeries were. Are you aware of? Yeah, because we're doing operations on the brain that can affect motor function, cognitive ability, yeah. Speech, hearing, everything like this. Are you aware that you've become impaired or lost function due to the surgery, or have you pretty much escaped that?
You're asking some great questions, Joanne. Yes, for each of the craniotomies, particularly the other ones, they would tell me what could go wrong. It's part of their protocol. They have to tell you. But with the craniotomies, every single one, they say that I could end up with a cavity. I could have some cognitive issues, my speech, which, by the way, my first craniotomy, I had right here in the front lobe. It came like this. I went to do a scan and it wasn't there. 3 months later, I had almost like a small, like key line. I had a tumor right here that was affecting my vision and my speech. I was
prefrontal
stuttering.
Cortex, isn't it? That's where your creative thinking is. That's where lobotomies happen. So that's really a part of your core you, isn't
it? That's why my wife realized that something was wrong on the kids. I said, daddy's stuttering. And not only that, I had a client that did not know. In Miami, a lot of people speak Spanish too, but because it's my native language, my first language, not only was I stuttering, but I was stuttering in Spanish. My wife realized that I was coming in home to the house and I was talking with this client that she knew. Sometimes we did some cocktails and stuff at the office, and his name was Don Smith, and I was talking to him in Spanish. Okay, Don, and my wife is saying, what is this? Smith, and he's talking in Spanish and stuttering a little bit. So that's what kind of like brought everything up. And then one day at the office, going up the elevator with two clients of the same company, two guys from the same company, and we went to lunch, and going up the elevator, I lost my vision momentarily. And I just, you know, I held to one of them. I freaked out. I really thought, oh my God, what's going on? So at that point, I said, look, I called my wife. We went upstairs. They set me down. I called my wife, and then she called over there to the clients and said, take his keys out. Don't let him drive. I'm going to take the metro rail, and so I'm going to pick him up. And from there, she took me to the hospital, and that was it. They did an MRI. They saw the tumor. I said, you're staying home. We're here. We're going to have to do some surgery. And so, it was a trauma when I first heard of this. I was thinking of the kids, what was going to happen to them. And financially, I mean, it got to a point that I had to ask for a leave of absence. But in this type of environment where you have to really, you know, come up and finish your projects, usually on budget, you know, we were putting all the internet cafes for these ships, and I was managing that, you know, doing some proxy satellite stuff. And so at the end of the day, I had to say, look, I'm going to find a replacement. They give me 6 months. And it was tough even then because, you know, I like what I was doing, but I had to work on, you know, focus on even with the kids, taking them to sports, I just had to worry about surviving, you know, I mean, taking care of myself. Yeah.
7-8 years on from you're all clear, for want of a better way of describing it. You're still playing tennis, you're still doing your 10K runs, you're fit, athletic.
Yeah.
Living your best life.
Living my best life. And like I said, you know, I look back and I see my survival experience as a blessing because God gave me the chance to sing the song I was born to sing. And one thing I have to share with you, Joanne, is I ask my clients, which, by the way, only three in almost 8 years that I'm doing this, I transitioned from being a CTO. That's another thing. Everybody, you're crazy. You're comfortable. I wasn't, you know, really a CTO anymore because I had given my position, but I knew that I could get back into that. But it was interesting because when I was making that transition, everybody also again, oh, you're crazy. You're going to start again at 57? You're going to start again at 57. People retire at 65. So retiring at 65. What do I do at the rest of my life? But I made that decision, and I went and I got all my acolytes to provide the best value to my clients. But I want to share this. In these 8 years, only three people, one from London, by the way, decided to go completely natural right off the bat. The other ones, they have that strong rule of the mind that they think, you know, hey, I got to continue to be in this route. I say, okay, I'm not going to advocate for you to do it, but you're going to notice that by going through my protocol, through the holistic journey, you're going to feel better, you're going to have less side effects, and you're going to heal. You're going to start, your process of healing is going to accelerate. And when they realize that, a couple towards the 90 days, you know, my protocol is 9 to 3 months. You go 12 weeks of pure working on the four legs of the table, physical, emotional, mental, and spiritual. And but in many cases, they want to continue because they found somebody that has the method and then holds them accountable with the support. And now that they're seeing the difference, they're going, can we go, can we keep going? And we usually go then, instead of weekly, we go once every 2 weeks, and then ultimately once a month until they feel, okay, it takes almost like a year. And they say, man, I'm free of cancer. What? This is great. So it's interesting because when you're doing something that you love, and I imagine you're part of, you're an example, it's not a job, man. You're doing something. You have a powerful tool right there, what you do with podcasting. And you understand. So really, I ask my clients sometimes, are you going to be the same person when you're back healthy? And they say, no, no way. I don't know. I say, look, usually it goes around, you know, it's aligned with your talents. But, you know, when you go to hospice, which we do sometimes as we did for a while as volunteers, my wife and I, the common denominator there of everybody tells you, man, if I had time, I would do the things that I really love to do. And why we don't do it when we're okay? We are not good stewards of our time. We are the ones that got us sick. You know, our lifestyle, like you said earlier, it's all in a hurry and, you know, hurry here, hurry there. You have a discussion or some sort of an argument with somebody on the street, or you're in traffic and you're stressed out and then you go eat fast, boy, you're great. And you do that day after day, two meals a day. Sooner or later, the body says, here's a medical bill, whatever disease, you know, because we're producing acidity. So I have a bunch of stuff that I have for you guys. I have a link that has so many things for you, John, for you and your audience. One of them is, to me, is there's a very important things in there. We talk about our emotions. I give you a little bit of each leg of the table, okay? But I have to share this if we have a few minutes. When I went to see this naturopath, he had this scan that he got either from Germany or Sweden. It was not approved by the FDA. He had it. This is in Palm Beach, Florida. Gabby, my best friend's wife, told me, go to him. And I went. I opened myself, which is important, to learning how to receive. It's very hard for us to receive. It's easier to give. We could talk about it in a different moment. But this guy says, let's do this scan, and which was, he put some wires in my head, in my hands, in my feet, and in my heart. And then he started the scan, and he had the screen, and you could see yourself inside. And Joanne, my body was like the 4th of July, the fireworks. there was so much acidity, obviously from the chemotherapy. That's, you know, and he says, boy, you're landing up all over the place. And that's because of the chemo. So he talked to me about the pH balance. And take note, because this is key. He says, look, disease cannot grow on a balanced pH body. And if you have it, what you're doing by balancing your pH and not being acidic is that you're destroying the environment for the disease to grow. So it is key to have a pH balance. And he said, look, imagine you have a pool. You said, yeah. If you put too much chlorine in the pool, it becomes too acidic. It's just dangerous to jump in there for your skin, your eyes, if you swallow some of it, your hair. On the other hand, if you don't put enough chlorine in your pool, the water turns green, which is also not healthy. There's bacteria there that if you swallow some of that water, it could actually damage your red blood cells. So he's telling me this, and I'm thinking, boy, I'm making the right decision to go natural. So the first thing he did was he took me on a 21-day detox. He called it body reset, which was all about reducing the acidity in my body. So after 21 days, we did another scan, and it was like 9 a day. There were a few areas, but very little compared to the 23 weeks before. So we did another 21 days. And when I come back from that, first of all, people would see me and say, man, you look great, Georges. What's going on? I said, look, I feel great. I am. How are you feeling? So they could not understand a guy with so many surgeries and all this stuff being so positive, which is also an amazing part of the mental leg on the table. It's all a mindset. It's amazing. Yeah.
It's been absolutely insightful, fascinating to hear your story, to hear about your mindset, your ethos around your own journey and how you're helping others. How can people get hold of you? So have you got a website, LinkedIn? Tell us about your book.
Yes, the website, I'm changing the name, but still is Qualivita, which in Latin is it means quality of life. And I'll give you all the links. And, you know, I do have, obviously, a social following in LinkedIn, Instagram, Facebook, and quite a bit in YouTube as well. That you know, you'll have the link to my YouTube channel. I have some great stuff.
That's in the show notes for the listeners to click on and follow you. Yeah, absolutely.
And the most important one, John, is the giveaway. It has a lot of value in there. It has the ebook I wrote on the balanced pH and your health has some recipes. It also sharing a table there. I call it the alkaline table, that describes which foods are acidic and which foods are alkaline. And I don't believe in extremes like veganism or paleo or keto. As a nutritionist, you have to just have some good proteins, good fats, and good carbs, and learn how to create balanced pH plates. So if you're having red meat, instead of eating it with other stuff that is acidic, have it with salad, have it with greens, with veggies, which are alkaline. And then there you go. You're having an alkaline plate. That's one thing. Then I have two recorded meditations on forgiveness, one for men, one for women. They're there. I have some information about how to water tips. You know, we need to drink water, we need to hydrate, how to sleep as well. And like I tell you before we started, there is an interesting conversation about us honoring our 24-hour cycle, human cycle. But that's in there.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
Brilliant.
I'll so put there's links a bunch to all of stuff, that. The rules of the mind, you'll see.
Yeah. I'll put links to all of that on the show notes so that everybody who's no doubt fascinated by your story, your journey, and your ethos, then they can take inspiration from your content, your YouTube, and I'll certainly be checking out your YouTube straight after we hang up and subscribing to your channel. So, Georges, thank you so much for your time
thank
today.
You. It's been thank you so much, John, for having me on your show. I appreciate it. Awesome.
As we bring this conversation to a close, I want to express my deepest gratitude to you, our listener, for lending your ear and heart to the cause of inclusion. Today's discussion struck a chord. Consider subscribing to Inclusion Bites and become part of our ever-growing community, driving real change. Share this journey with friends, family, and colleagues. Let's amplify the voices that matter. Got thoughts, stories, or a vision to share? I'm all ears. Reach out to joe.lockwood@seachangehappen.co.uk and let's make your voice heard. Until next time, this is Joanne Lockwood, signing off with a promise to return with more enriching narratives that challenge, inspire, and unite us all. Here's to fostering a more inclusive world, one episode at a time. Catch you on the next bite.